And once you ride the roller coaster and realize there's nothing to be scared of, you're kind of overcoming your fear, and that's the whole point of.
We've been getting a lot of messages about anxiety. And, yeah. You know, anxiety is a real sensitive topic, right? But it's also a topic that's never talked about.
It's true.
But anxiety is really real. And there's certain levels to anxiety that people go through in their life. So some people are at the extreme of anxiety. And then you have some people that are at the very beginning part. So today, we're going to have an opportunity, Ryan, to be able to talk to our guests, talk to the people that are watching the show, and kind of get feedback. You know, we want you guys to be able to send messages, drop comments below to interact with us so we know what we're looking at when we come to anxiety.
Yeah, I'm excited about today's show. It's not something I thought I'd actually be doing at any point. But,
right.
You know, I guess when we were talking and I mentioned that I grew up with anxiety disease.
Yeah.
I've never had more comments or not comments, messages from people hitting me up on, DMing me on Instagram, just being like, how'd you get through this? I have bad anxiety and I can't do this or I can't do that, and asking me all kinds of questions. And I didn't realize how many people actually suffer from anxiety because it's really hard. And so, you know, I realized it's more messages than any topic I've ever talked about.
Right.
And I think I'm excited. I think we can help a lot of people from what I'm seeing.
It's not only anxiety from just people that are everyday people, but from a sports perspective, looking at the anxiety that people go through from the sports world, from boxing, from tennis, volleyball, men's basketball, football. And also, we don't want to leave out the coaches' anxiety. So yeah. Coaches having to deal with winning and losing.
Can you imagine? That's like the world's blaming you.
How do you deal with this?
The world's literally blaming you.
It's literally blaming you. Imagine that. Even, you know, if we even take a look at being a coach. I was a coach, right? And with me being a coach, one of the reasons why I decided to even step away and just go into my private practice of developing people was I cared so much that I felt like my blood pressure was going up. You know, my eating habits was terrible. I didn't get a chance to exercise as much. And I found myself not being in the best conditioning of health.
Yeah.
And it was because of the drive to win. But when you're a coach, you're coaching a team, so you're kind of relying on a collective group of people to share one vision to win. So imagine every day I'm going through this anxiety and not even knowing that it was an anxiety or having an anxiety attack. I would never even know that. And I experienced this at a very young age, and this was me and my coaching. And now that I look back, that's what I dealt with. But I wasn't able to label it.
Nope.
I wasn't able to have coping mechanisms.
You were dealing with it at around the same time I was, which is there wasn't really a word for it.
No.
You know, so when I grew up, I called it, I think we talked about this last time, I called it the feeling. I was like 13 years old and I didn't know what it was. I just knew that I wasn't depressed. Like I wasn't sad. But I had this feeling inside that I couldn't explain, and I didn't want to do anything, and I didn't want to go anywhere. And I would literally tell my parents, I have the feeling. That's what all I could call it. Mm. And at 13, I don't know, so we're talking, you know, in the like early 90s, I guess, late 80s, no, early 90s. And it was just wasn't a thing. And like, my parents were like, well, at first they were like, okay, you know, that you'll be okay, you're going through, and then when it was like, no, this isn't going away, it was like more or less, and I don't blame them, like, what's wrong with you, like, get your shit
right,
together,
right.
Stop, like, right. you know, stop with the feeling.
That's something that people say all the time, like, get over it.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen it, like, most of all of my anxiety happened through sports, so imagine getting ready to perform before a game, you really want to win, it's a championship game, and you duck off and you throw up.
That's
anxiety.
That's serious anxiety.
Right, but but people can see you doing that and say, hey, get over it.
So it was bad because, you know, your own parents who care about you the most, they got to a level where they were telling me, my dad mostly, but my mom's like, just get over it. Like, just stop. And I'd be like, I can't
stop.
And so I actually have some of my like hardest memories. I remember one where my mom's mom, my grandmother, who was like just a badass lady. She died. She lived to be 104. And she was just like, she was a proper woman, but she was just like, you didn't fuck with her. And she hadn't really fully seen it. And I remember my parents were just having such a hard time coping with it. I don't remember why she was over at my house that day. And I just couldn't stop. And my parents' house. And she threw me in a cold shower. I was like 13 or 14. Lily was just like, get it together, and like threw me in a cold shower and thinking somehow it would make me better.
Right.
And like, it doesn't help. Like, yeah, and because somehow they just thought, like, stop.
Right.
And it was, it got to the place where like my parents were like, no, no, you're going to school. And I'd go to school and I'd just go sit outside of class and just, I couldn't handle it. I didn't know what was wrong with me. And it was just, I call this feeling. And eventually, I mean, I went to, you know, you didn't go to psychologists at the time.
Right.
I was, you know, you were sick if you went to a psychologist.
Absolutely.
So I went to a few shrinks. Like, I think they took me to 3 or 4, and eventually they found someone who's like, he has serious anxiety. And they're like, basically, like, what the fuck's that?
So how did you handle it? What was like some of the steps like that you went through at that time that helped you kind of like manage it or overcome it?
So what's really interesting, we talked about this, I think, on the last show, is, you know, my dad actually is what got me over it. The steps, I'd say that was tough, but having anxiety in real life, like when you're not a kid, is much tougher. You don't realize, because like, that's real life, but you got parents and you don't have real responsibilities, right? So that was easier. It was terrible. I mean, I have like these things that I remember of just like, I thought the world was ending, right? But my dad set up a program of, I remember there was a book, and I'm sure it's still around. There was only like one book out at the time on it. And I remember the psychologist had my parents read it. It wasn't really for me as much. It was called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. That was the name of the book at the time.
That keyword, feel the fear
and do it anyway.
And do it anyway.
And I remember,
I got a good story about
that. Still remember this book sitting there on the shelf. And eventually my dad was just like, I think as I said, he set up this program for me, which was like every day we're going to add a little something more, because I wasn't going to school. I wasn't doing anything. And it led up to eventually me actually going out of the country for school for like a month at the end of this like program. And I kind of figured out that transitioned me back into real life. Now, the anxiety never went away. But what's interesting is that they put me on meds when I was a kid. I was like one of the very first SSRIs, you know, like today they have like Zoloft and stuff, but they didn't have that back then.
Right.
And they weaned me off of it. You know, I figured out, I guess, how to cope. And I think they just thought, oh, he's just going to forget he has anxiety. But like, I was never saw myself as normal. I mean, I used to tell my parents that. I remember even when I went to college, I'm like, it's easy for everybody else. I'm not normal. It's not easy for me. Like just going away as a freshman, like moving, the anxiety that was like so extreme. And I remember trying to tell my parents that, like, and they're like, no, everybody feels that. Like, no, they don't feel what I feel. Like,
so each person that deals with anxiety may feel it at a different level. And I think that's something that, you know, when people in your family or people that are close to you, your mentors, people that you trust, when you're sharing things that are going on with you, I think it's really important that they listen.
It's now I'm so sensitive to it,
right?
Because of what I went through. And so I'm so sensitive to it with my own kids, and I'm sensitive to it with other people because I can see the symptoms. So like, I think we talked about this a little bit too before, but like my hardest thing, my anxiety comes when my brain's not busy, or when my brain's too busy, I should say. And you know, my brain starts to, I think about something that could be wrong. And then it starts to spiral as to like the worst case. And then it goes down this deep hole, and I almost like dig inside and don't want to go anywhere. I just want to like crawl up under a blanket and not leave.
So let me ask you this. How do you feel and how would you handle with your kids? If your kid was dealing with anxiety, would you push him? Because I've seen situations and examples to where someone's afraid to get on a roller coaster, right? A roller coaster can really bring to the surface really quick that anxiety type feel, right? What would you do? Would you push your kid and say, hey, you can overcome this fear? Mm-hmm. Or would you be more compassionate? I'm kind of curious of what's your stance on
dealing with that anxiety? It's an interesting question because there's two ways that I answer that. So I'm a very, like, as a dad, which is my most proud job, you know. I push my kids. I push them hard. My 8-year-old plays tennis 5 days a week.
Right.
Plays in a league. I coach it. He's very competitive on his own. And I push him. He loves it, but I push him. On the other hand, Magic Mountain or Disneyland and he didn't want to do a roller coaster, I'd be like, we're doing the roller coaster.
Right.
I'd make him do it. But not because of the anxiety. It's that feel the fear and do it anyway type thing.
That's what I was trying to get.
And it's a like, what you're scared of in that case is the unknown. And once you ride the roller coaster and realize there's nothing to be scared of, you're kind of overcoming your fear. And that's the whole point of, so what's interesting for me, even to this day, is anxiety, as you know, isn't, for all of us that are facing it, it isn't something you like control. You don't just all of a sudden say, go away and I feel better.
Right.
It's there and it's real. I used to say as a kid, when I try and explain it to my psychologist, I'd rather someone cut me with a knife than feel what I'm feeling. Mm. That's how I'd say to them. I'd say I'd rather it be like cut every day than feel what I'm feeling inside. And that's how bad this like feeling was. And I still get the same feeling. Like, I had it this week, I've had it last week. And it could be a trigger, and I could go a year without it, but it could be a small trigger, it could be a big trigger, and I don't want to do anything.
Right.
My natural inclination is shut down, cancel everything, stay in bed, stay in my house, don't see anybody, don't talk to anybody. And the interesting thing is before I understood it, so when I was young and, my 20s and running Relativity and people were calling me and big people and I wouldn't return their phone calls. They'd get offended. They'd think, oh, he thinks he's too good for me. Or I'd cancel a meeting.
But see, nobody talks about this because the circle that we're running in and the circle that you grew up in and I've been in the last 20 years, it's like 1% of people, right? So they really never have a private space for themselves.
No.
And when you don't have a private space for yourself, like I deal with athletes.
Yeah.
When they don't have a private space for themselves, sometimes they don't return a phone call right away because they may be dealing with some things. And so it's not like you were neglecting it, but really that was one of your coping mechanisms to like.
I'd literally go into a shell. I put a wall around me. And, it's interesting because, I had one of my mentors was a guy named Jim Wyatt, who was the CEO and chairman of William Morris. And he sold it to Ari and was co-chairman for a minute,
right?
After he sold it. And before that was the co-CEO and chairman of ICM. And he was like one of my early mentors and he was on my board. And he used to say, he'd send his assistant into my office. And he'd be like, I have this rule. I don't leave the office until I call every person back. And he's like, and I'm gonna have my assistant train your assistant so that, and Ronnie Meyer, who was another mentor, used to have the same rule. Be like, I'm going to sit in the office until I call every person back. I don't care who it is. So
it can drive you nuts, though.
Well, what's interesting is he sent his assistant in, trained my assistant, said, okay, got the list of all these people to call back. And I look at the list and I feel the friggin' stomach start turning and the like, that guy's going to want to talk about this and I don't have an answer for him. And that guy's going to like, oh, that fucking movie's not ready. And I don't even know how to tell him we're not doing that. And he's going, and it would spiral me so bad. I'd be like, I can't make any of these phone calls.
At all.
I'm not calling anybody back right now. I'm just going home.
You know how many people feel like that, though?
Like, I just would lose it. And like, sometimes I'd have, let's say I'd have a business partner even, and it would be, you know, we'd be in a big deal or we'd be in the middle of something, and I didn't have answers for them, or at least answers they wanted to hear. And, you know, what's so funny is, the again, it's feel the fear and do it anyway. Like, I know today, 20 years later, they don't care if I have the answer. They just want me to call them and say, here's what it is. I have it or I don't have it. And that's all they need is communication, right? That's what 99% of people need. It's just that communication. But I pissed off so many people and I upset so many people because they think I was just like, oh, he's just ignoring me.
You've just been an asshole.
Yeah. And instead it was like, I was so anxious to call and tell. I knew I wasn't telling them what they wanted to hear. And I just didn't know how to call.
You know, that's very normal though. It's when people hear this, it's going to be a lot of people that identify with you. And not only identify with you, they're going to put themselves in your seat. So one of the things that, like, I'm over here thinking about, one of some of the things that you've learned that can help them, like, cope or become better at dealing with that anxiety of, like, returning a phone call back. Because we've all been there. We've all sat there and I'm looking at my phone.
Yeah, you're like,
and I'm like, okay, I got 300 text messages. I got 600 emails.
Yeah, I literally.
I'm just going to take a nap.
Look, and I hate it in the middle, but look at this. Unread text messages.
Yeah, you got 1,000. you got 1,000. And it's not, and so just so you guys know, it's not that Ryan don't want to get back with you. Ryan's still dealing with a little of his anxiety because he's worried about what you're going to ask him.